Well, welcome back. We're here in the Financial Freedom Seminar. Our next lesson is going to be on the desire and the dream. So as we said earlier, it's very important to define the what and the why so that then we can start talking about the how. Now, there's a very important formula that I'm going to show you guys here that was written by a guy named Paul J. Meyer. And I like to think about this in terms of what this does for us. I don't think this is gonna work. Well, let's focus over here. All right. So if we have this, let's say this is a child, right? And let's say that over here he sees some other kid. Let's say he sees some other kid riding a bicycle. Right? And this kid sees this other child. And this kid's having what? Lots of fun riding this bicycle, right? What's immediately going to happen to this child? Let's say this child's 5 or 6 years old. What's going to happen through his mind when he sees this? He's going to start to see himself doing what? Saying, hey, maybe someday that could be me riding this bicycle and having fun, right? So it says here, whatever you vividly imagine, right? That's what he's doing. He's using his what? Imagination. And it says here, whatever you ardently what? Desire. Where's he going to desire this? Right here in his heart, it says, whatever you sincerely believe. What's this child going to do after he sees this in his mind and he wants it? What's the next step he's going to do? Ask who? Ask his mom and dad, right? He's going to speak. He's going to ask. And he's going to say, what's he going to say? Mom, Dad, I, what's the magic word? Want. I want a bicycle. Right? Maybe the first time he asks, they may not tell him yes. But if it's an ardent desire, a burning desire, and he keeps asking, eventually someday, what are his parents going to say? They're going to say yes. And as soon as they say yes, what's going to happen to this kid? He's going to be like, yes! He's going to be super happy, because immediately, what's he going to know in his heart? He's going to what? Believe that the yes is already a given. Does he know when it's going to happen? Does he care how it's going to happen? No. He knows that if his parents told him yes, right? Then it's a done deal. It's just a matter of what? Time. Right? So it says here, whatever you vividly imagine, you ardently desire, you sincerely believe, and you enthusiastically what? Act upon. How did he act? He asked. It says here, must inevitably come to pass. So in the last lesson, we talked about the purpose in life, God's will for my life, why do I want to achieve financial prosperity? What I'm here to tell you is that financial prosperity is for you. Financial prosperity starts in the mind first, and it's physical second, right? You have to think about it, you have to want it, you have to plan it, you have to desire it, and then you're going to start to do some actions to make it happen. You have to start getting rid of that limiting poverty and scarcity mentality and replacing your thought process with abundance mentality, realizing that God is good and that there's more than enough for everybody. There's a book I'd like to recommend to you if you've never heard of it called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. The book is not called Work Hard and Grow Rich. It's called what? Think and Grow Rich. What is it telling you? That you have to start to think first, right? We become what we think about all the time. And as I said earlier, prosperity is something that can be taught, and prosperity is something that can be learned. We're not born with it, just like no kid is born riding a bicycle, right? But riding a bicycle is a skill that you develop by what? Wanting to learn how to ride it. It's the same thing with prosperity. If you want to get out of debt, if you want to become prosperous and rich, it's something that you can learn. You just have to start working at it. All right, so we're going to read a story called The Man Who Desired Gold. It's also from the richest man in Babylon. And we're going to see what the story tells us. All right. So let's see here. Here we go. And rather than me just reading it, I'd like to get you guys to help me read it. Now, this story takes place 5,000-6,000 years ago when Babylon was, you know, the richest empire in the world. And this is a conversation between two friends, a guy who used to build chariots and a guy who was a musician. So let's drop into their conversation to see what happened. Go for it.
Bansar, is that correctly? Mm-hmm. The chariot builder of Babylon was thoroughly discouraged. From his seat upon the low wall surrounding his property, he gazed sadly at his simple home and the open workshop in which stood a partially completed chariot. His wife frequently appeared at the open door, her furtive glances in his direction reminding him that the meal bag was almost empty and he should be at work finishing the chariot, hammering and hewing, polishing and painting, stretching, tawning the leather over the wheel rim, preparing it for delivery so he could collect from his wealthy customers. Nevertheless, his fat, muscular body set so solidly upon the wall. His slow mind was struggling patiently with a problem for which he could find no answer. The hot tropical sun, so typical of his valley of Urites, built down upon him mercifully. Beads of perspiration formed upon his brow and trickled down unnoticed to loose them in the hairy jungle of his chest. Beyond his home towered a high terrace wall surrounding the king palace. Nearby, cleaving to the blue heavens as the painted towers of the Temple of Bel, in the shadow of such grandeur was his simple home and many others less far neat and well cared for.
Okay.
Babylon was like this, a mixture of grandeur and squalor, of dazzling wealth and dire poverty, crowded together without a plan or a system within the protecting walls of the city. Behind him, had he cared to turn and look, the noisy chariots of the rich jostled and the crowded aside of the sandaled tradesmen, as well as the barefoot beggars. Even the rich were forced to turn into the gutters to clear the way for the long lines of the slave water carriers on the king's business, each bearing a heavy goatskin of water to be poured upon the hanging gardens. Banzer was too engrossed in his own problem to hear or heed the confused hubbub of the busy city. It was the unexpected twang of the strings from a familiar lyre that aroused him from his reverie. He turned and looked into the sensitive, smiling face of his best friend, Cubby, the musician. May the gods bless thee with great liberty. Liberality. May the gods bless thee with great liberality, my good friend, begged Cubby with an elaborate salute. Yet it does appear that they have already been so generous through the needest not to labor. I rejoice with thee in good fortune. More, I would even share it with thee. Pray, from thy purse, which must be bulging, else thou wouldst be busy in your shop, extract but 2 humble shekels and lend them to me until after the nobleman's feast this night. Thou wilt not miss them ere they are returned.
So basically, these guys, one guy is sitting there not working. When the musician shows up, he says, hey, well, that's great. I guess you must have a lot of money. I just need to borrow 2 shekels, which is like 2 pieces of silver, right? No big deal. What does his friend say to him? He says, if I did have 2 shekels, Banzer responded gloomily, to no one I could lend them, not even to you, my best of friends, for they would be my fortune. My entire fortune. No one lends his entire fortune, not even to his best friend. What? Exclaimed Cubby with genuine surprise. You don't have 1 shekel in your purse, yet you sit here like a statue upon the wall? Why don't you complete the chariot? How else can you provide for your noble appetite? This is not like you, my friend. Where is your endless energy? Does something distress you? Has the gods brought something to trouble you? A torment from the gods it must be, Banzer agreed. And then he tells him about a dream that he had. He said, I began with a dream, a senseless dream, in which I thought I was a man of means. From my belt hung a handsome purse, heavy with coins. There were shekels from which I cast with careless abandon and freedom to the beggars. There were pieces of silver with which I did buy finery for my wife and whatever I did desire for myself. There were pieces of gold which make me feel assured of the future and unafraid to spend the silver. A glorious feeling of contentment was within me. You would not have known me for your hard-working friend, nor would you have known my wife, so free from wrinkles was her face and shining with happiness. She again was the smiling maiden of our early married days. So what do you guys think happened?
He was delusional.
In his dreams. Yeah, and it says here, a pleasant dream indeed, commented Cubby, but why should such pleasant feelings as it aroused turn thee into a glum statue upon the wall? You want to continue?
A pleasant dream indeed, commented Cubby, but why should such a pleasant feeling as it aroused turn into a glum statue upon the wall? Why indeed? Because when I awoke and remember how empty my purse and a feeling of rebellion swept over me. Let us talk it over together, for as the sailor do say, we ride in the same boat, we two. As youngster, we went together to the priest to learn wisdom. As young men, we shared each other's pleasure. As grown men, we have always been close friends. We have been content subjects of our kind. We have been satisfied to work long hours and spend our earnings freely. We have earned much coins in the years that have passed, yet to know the joys that come from wealth. We must dream about them. Bah! Are we more than dumb sheep? We live in the richest city in the world. The travelers do say none equals in its wealth. About us is much display of wealth, but of it we ourselves have naught. After half a lifetime of hard labor, thou, my best of friend, has an empty purse and said to me, may I borrow such a trifle and 2 shekels until after the nomad men feast this night. Then what do I reply? Do I say, here is my purse, its contents, will I gladly share? No. I admit my purse is an empty as thine. What's the matter? Why can't we acquire silver and gold, more than enough food and robes?
I'm sorry.
Consider also our son, Manzah continued, and they're not 17 following in the footsteps of your father. Need they and their families and their sons' family live all the lives in the midst of such treasures and gold, yet like us, be content to banquet upon sour goat's milk and portage? Never in all the years of our friendship did thou talk like this before, Manzah. Kobe was puzzled. Never in all those years did I think like this before. From early dawn until darkness stopped me. I have labored to build the finest chairs that any man could make. Soft-hearted, hoping someday God would recognize my worthy deeds and bestow upon me great prosperity. This he has never done.
At last I realize this he will never do. Therefore my heart is sad. I wish to be a man of means. I wish to own lands and cattle, to have fine robes and coin in my purse. I'm willing to work for these things with all the strength in my back, with all the skill in my hands, with all the cunning in my mind. But I wish my labors to be fairly rewarded. What's the matter with us? Again I ask you, why can't we have our just share of the good things so plentiful for those who have the gold with which to buy them? So what are we seeing so far in this conversation? After the guy wakes up, is he happy? No, he's not happy. He says, I woke up and I realized my reality is nothing like my dream, right? In my dream I was rich, and my reality I have worked for 20 years, half of my life, and I got nothing. I can't even lend you two pieces of silver, right? He started thinking about, hey, you know, we work really hard and it just feels like we're not getting ahead in life. What's happening to our kids? Our kids are going down the same path, you know. And he says, his friend says, never in all those years did I ever hear you talk like this. And what does he say right here? He says, never in all those years did I what? Think like this. That's the key, right? He was going along the path that he and his friends and his family had always gone until he stopped. He made a pause in the road. He stopped working, and he started to what? To think. And he said, why in the world don't I have any money? I worked for 20 years, and I feel I'm going nowhere. What is wrong? See, it might seem like he was wasting his time, but no, this was like the key moment for him where he had to make that pause in the road and say, what am I doing with my life? Where am I going? What am I doing wrong? And it's those key moments in life when we stop from all the busyness that we got that changes, massive changes can come into your life, right? I don't think it's a coincidence you guys are here. I don't think it's a coincidence you guys are watching. There's a reason why this talk came into your life at this point in time. You know, and he says, why can't we have what we need? Want to continue?
Why don't you answer? Kobe replied.
When I knew an answer, Kobe replied, no better than thou, I am satisfied. My earnings from my lear are quickly gone. Often must I plan a scheme that my family be not hungry. Also, within my breast is a deep longing for the lear large enough that it may truly sing the strains of music that do surge through my mind. With such an instrument can I make music finer than even the king has ever heard before. Such a lyre thou shouldst have. No man in all Babylon could make it sing more sweetly, could make it sing so sweetly. Not only the king, but God himself would be delighted. But how mayst thou secure it, while both of us are as poor as the king's slaves? Listen to the bell. Here they come. He pointed to a long column of half-naked, sweating, water-bearing, potting laboriously up the narrow street from the river. Five abreast they marched, each bent over a heavy goat skin of water. A fine figure of a man, he who doth lead them. Kobe indicated the wearer of the belt who marched in front without a load. A prominent man in his own country. 'Tis easy to see. There are many good figures in that line, Banser agreed. As good men as we, tall blond men from the north, laughing black men from the south, little brown men from the near countries, all marching together from the river to the gardens, back and forth, day after day, year after year. Naught of happiness to look forward to, beds of straw upon which to sleep, hard grain porridge to eat. Pity the poor brutes, Kobe. Pity them I do, yet thou just make me see how little better off we are, free men, though we call ourselves. That is truth, Kobe. Unpleasant thought, though it may be, part of my reading here. I do not wish to go on year after year living slavish lives, working, 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 getting nowhere. Might we not find out from others how to acquire gold and do as they do, Kobe inquired. Perhaps there is some secret we might learn if we but sought from those who knew, replied Banzer thoughtfully.
Okay. This very day, suggested Kobe, I did pass our old friend Arkad riding in this golden chariot. Well, before I read that, let's just analyze what we just read. So basically, as these two guys are talking to each other, who passes by? A line of slaves, right? What kind of slaves were they?
They were
carrying water. They were carrying water. What color skin were these slaves? White, black, brown, skinny, fat, short, tall. Did it really matter what color they were? No, they were all what?
Slaves.
Now, they say, oh, poor slaves, right? What does a slave do when he wakes up? He goes to work. At the end of the day, they give him food. He goes to bed. He wakes up the next morning to do what? Go to work. So he says, okay, I feel sorry for these slaves. And yet he says, how are we any different? We're supposed to be free. What do? We wake up, go to work, make some money. At the end of the week, how much money do we got? Nothing. The next week, what do? Get up, go to work, make some money. At the end of the next week, how much money do we got? Nothing. So what's the difference? Right? We got nothing. We're the same as them. So he says, this very day I did pass our old friend Arkad riding in his golden chariot. This I will say, he did not look over my humble head as many in his station might consider it his right. Instead, he did wave his hand that all onlookers might see him pay greetings and bestow his smile of friendship upon Kobe the musician. He is claimed to be the richest man in all Babylon, Banser mused. So rich, the king is said to seek his golden aid in the affairs of the treasury, Kobe replied. So rich, Banser interrupted. I fear if I should meet him in the darkness of the night, I would lay my hands upon his fat wallet. Nonsense, reproved Kobe. A man's wealth is not in the purse he carries. A man's purse quickly empties if there be no golden stream to refill it. Arkad has an income that constantly keeps his purse full no matter how liberally he spends. Income, that's the thing, said Banzer. I wish an income that will keep flowing into my purse whether I sit upon the wall or travel to far lands. Arkad must know how a man can make an income for himself. Do you suppose it's something he could make clear to a mind as slow as mine? Methinks that he did teach his knowledge to his son Nomasir, Kobe responded. Did he not go to Nineveh, and so it is told at the end, become from without aid from his father, one of the richest men in that city? Kobe, you bring to me a rare what? Thought. A new light gleamed in Banzer's eyes. It costs nothing to ask wise advice from a good friend, and Arkad was always that. Never mind, though our purses be as empty as the falcon's nest of a year ago, let not that detain us. We are weary of being without gold in the midst of plenty. We wish to become men of means. Come, let us go to Arkad and ask how we may also acquire income for ourselves. Thou speakest with true inspiration, Banzer. You bring to my mind a new understanding. So what's happening? all of a sudden, these guys who went from being depressed and broke, even though physically they're still the same, mentally they've awoken. Mentally they've shifted, right? Because they're saying, I now have a new understanding. He says, you make me realize the reason why we never found any measure of wealth. Here's the key phrase. We never, what? Sought it. We never looked for it. We never thought about it. You labored patiently to build the staunchest chariots in Babylon. To that purpose, you devoted your best efforts, your best endeavors, and at that, you did succeed. I strove to become a skillful lyre player, and at it, I did succeed. Right? So were these guys total failures? No. One guy was the best chariot builder. The other guy was the best musician. What was the thing they neither of them had thought about? How to make their money work for them, right? What do you think Arkad, their friend, had spent his time doing to become the richest man in Babylon? He had spent his time thinking about money, right? He says, in those things toward which we exerted our best efforts, we succeeded. God was content to let us continue thus. Now, at last, we see a light bright like that from the rising sun. It biddeth us to learn more, that we may prosper more. With a new understanding, we shall find honorable ways to accomplish our desires. So how does the story end? It says, let us go to Arkad this very day, Bansi urged. Also, let us take other friends from our boyhood days who have fared no better than ourselves to join us, that they too may share in this wisdom. You were ever thus thoughtful of your friends, Bansir. Therefore, you have many friends. It shall be as you say. We go this day and take them with us. So, what happened in this little story? What is the takeaway for us today in this practical world? What's that?
I think with these men in the story, they came to a place in life. They realized that, first of all, they had to think. You know,
right.
So at that moment when, and then they realized they were delusional who they thought they were, and they stopped doing what they was good at, and then realized that their poverty was at their door just like a slave. And then when they came to their senses, well, how can we get that stream coming again, where we can feel honorable again? You know, and I think they came to that reality that now it's time for us not only to make the money, but how to make the money make money.
Exactly. How to keep some of it and how to make it grow, right? Not just blow it off all the time. So it says here, these are some of the key phrases from this story. We do not wish to go on year after year living slavish lives, working, 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 getting nowhere, right? The reason most people have never found any measure of wealth is because they never even looked for it. In those things in which we exerted our best efforts, we succeeded. We need to learn more that we may prosper more. With the new understanding, we're going to find honorable ways to accomplish our desires. So the breakthrough thought from this story is, if you want to be financially free, you have to desire to be financially free. Most people who don't have a lot of money is because they've never really spent any time thinking about money, right? You have to make it, just like that child wanted the bicycle, you have to make it your what? I want financial freedom. I want it because, and you have to have your why. Right? Because I don't want to be a slave. I don't want to be in debt. I don't want to have a stream of income that comes to me without me having to work for it. Without a strong desire to achieve financial prosperity, you're never going to achieve it. So how do desires work? Desires basically require time and study. We all have time, but not everybody uses their time wisely, right? So you have to decide to figure out how wealth is created. And once you figure it out, do that your focus, and then figure out how to put that money to work for you, right? And it says, I had the desire to prosper before I figured out how to make wealth. So before doing something, you first have to have the desire. Before that child got that bicycle, he first had to what? See it here and want it here. Right? Same with prosperity. Desires have to be very definite. They have to be strong. It's not enough to just say, I want to be rich. You have to start with the focus in mind and set yourself a goal, something that's tangible. For example, it says here, if a man wants 5 pieces of gold, that's a tangible desire that he can press to fulfillment. After he's backed his desire for 5 pieces of gold, next he can find 20 pieces of gold and later 1,000 pieces of gold. So in our case, it's not enough to say, I want to be rich. If you don't even have 10,000 bucks, make it your goal. I want to have 10,000 bucks by the end of the year. Or if you have 10,000, we'll make it your next goal. I want to have $100,000. You know, if you have no passive income coming into your life, if all your income comes from work, set a goal to say, I'd like to have $100 coming from passive income, and then $1,000 coming from passive income. In 10 years, I'd like to have $100,000 coming from passive income, and so forth. But you got to start somewhere, right? You got to set a small goal that you can achieve within a year, and then set another goal for the next year, and then set a goal for 5 years, and then set a goal for 10 years, and so forth. But you got to start that desire at some point. It says here, you first have to learn how to secure one definite small desire. Once you've trained yourself to get that small goal, then that sets you up to go for a larger one. This is the process by which wealth is accumulated. First in small sums, then in larger ones as you become more, as you learn more and you become more what? Capable. Desires have to be simple and definite. If you have too many or they're too confusing or they're beyond your ability to accomplish, what are you going to achieve? Nothing, right? You have to start with the small, tangible goal that you can hit. For example, if you've never saved any money, make it your goal to save $100. Make it your goal to save $1,000. You know, set some small goal that you can achieve every week and every month. Act like a free man and succeed like one. Decide what you desire to accomplish, and then your work will aid you to achieve it. Okay, we're going to see a little video from Napoleon Hill. Napoleon Hill is, like I said, the guy who wrote this book, Think and Grow Rich.
How do you do? I'm very happy to have this personal visit with you. Won't you be seated, please? And now, may I request that you forget all your problems and just relax while I bring you the master key with which you may unlock the door to any opportunity that your mind can conceive. The master key consists of 17 principles, the first of which is definiteness of purpose. Right here at the beginning of our visit, I'm going to make you a promise. If you will decide definitely what you want most during your entire lifetime and write it down on paper so that I can read it, I will give you the master key with which you may open the door to the attainment of your desires, whatever they may be. The exact moment when I will deliver this master key to you will depend entirely upon when you are ready to receive it. This is the first of 13 messages that I will deliver to you. Now, in each message, I will describe the master key in terms that you will understand, if you are ready to understand. And now I shall give you the first cue as to the nature of the great master key which has been responsible for all the great successes in every calling, in every part of the world. Please listen carefully to what I have to say, because you may discover the secret of the master key in this first visit. You may get your first cue as to the nature of the great master key when I tell you that psychologists have discovered a natural law which is the very foundation of all personal successes. And I can describe it to you in one short sentence so you can understand it. Whatever the mind can conceive and believe, the mind can achieve. Isn't that a profound statement? You will notice that it says nothing about the need for education, but simply that whatever your mind can conceive and believe, your mind can achieve. Now, if you want evidence that the mind can achieve whatever the mind can conceive without the benefit of formal education. You only have to remember that Thomas A. Edison conceived the idea of becoming an inventor and lived to become the world's greatest scientist in the field of invention with only 3 months of common school education. When I first heard Andrew Carnegie describe this natural law, which makes it possible for you and I and everyone else to write his own price tag in life and attain it, I became so enthused over it that I began to search for the power back of it. And my curiosity led me finally to the discovery of the master key, which I shall reveal to you if you are ready to receive it. My search led me to the study of the spiritual forces with which all of us are blessed. And it was in this field that I came upon a clue which has enabled me to help millions of people to find their earthly destinies. I want to describe my discovery in the simplest terms possible, because it will reveal to you why it is true that whatever the mind can conceive and believe, the mind can achieve, regardless of how many times you may have failed in the past or how lofty your aims and hopes may be. I caught my first fleeting glimpse of the profound law which provides the means by which we may choose our own purpose in life and attain it while I was being coached by Andrew Carnegie during the organization of the Science of Success philosophy. I had just finished telling Mr. Carnegie that I feared he had chosen the wrong person to give the world the first practical philosophy of personal success because of my youth, my lack of education, and my lack of finances. Well, at this point, Mr. Carnegie delivered a lecture that I shall never forget because it changed my entire life and paved the way for my helping to change the lives of millions of people, some of them not yet born. Let me call your attention to a great power which is under your control, said Mr. Carnegie, a power which is greater than poverty, greater than the lack of education, greater than all of your fears and superstitions combined. It is the power to take possession of your own mind and direct it to whatever ends you may desire. This profound power, Mr. Carnegie continued, is the gift of the Creator, and it must have been considered the greatest of all of his gifts to man, because it is the only thing over which man has the complete and unchallengeable right of control and direction. When you speak of your poverty and lack of education, Mr. Carnegie explained, you are simply directing your mind power to attract these undesirable circumstances, because it is true that whatever your mind feeds upon, your mind attracts to you. Now you see why it is important that you recognize that all success begins with definiteness of purpose, with a clear picture in your mind of precisely what you want from life. Then Mr. Carnegie continued his speech with a description of a great universal truth which made such an impact upon my mind that I began then and there to give myself a new outlook on life and set up for myself a goal so far above my previous achievements that it shocked my friends and relatives when they heard about it. Everyone, said Mr. Carnegie, comes to the earth plane blessed with the privilege of controlling his mind power and directing it to whatever ends he may choose. But, he continued, everyone brings over with him at birth the equivalent of two sealed envelopes, one of which is clearly labeled, the riches you may enjoy if you take possession of your own mind and direct it to ends of your own choice. And the other is labeled, the penalties you must pay if you neglect to take possession of your mind and direct it. And now let me reveal to you, said Mr. Carnegie, the contents of those two sealed envelopes. In the one labeled riches is this list of blessings. 1, sound health. 2, peace of mind. 3, a labor of love of your own choice. 4, freedom from fear and worry. 5, a positive mental attitude. 6, material riches of your own choice and quantity. In the sealed envelope labeled penalties, Mr. Carnegie continued, is this list of the prices one must pay for neglecting to take possession of his own mind. 1, ill health. 2, fear and worry. 3, indecision and doubt. 4, frustration and discouragement throughout life. 5, poverty and want. 6, and a whole flock of evils consisting of envy, greed, jealousy, anger, hatred, and superstition. Now, my mission in life is to help you and everyone who needs my help to open up and use the contents of the sealed envelope labeled riches. And the starting point from which you must take off if you wish to write your own ticket from here on out for the remainder of your life, I will describe for you in these simple instructions. 1, procure a neat pocket-sized notebook, or something on the order of this one here, loose leaf affair. And on page 1, write down a clear description of your major desire in life, the one circumstance or position or thing which you will be willing to accept as your idea of success. And remember before you begin writing that your only limitations are those which you set up in your own mind or permit others to set up for you. And 2, on page 2 of your notebook, write down a clear statement of precisely what you intend to give in return for that which you desire from life. And then start in right where you stand now to begin giving. And 3, memorize both of your statements, what you desire and what you intend to give in return for it. And repeat them at least a dozen times daily. And always end your statements with this expression of gratitude for the blessings with which you were gifted at birth. I ask not, O divine providence, for more riches, but more wisdom with which to accept and use wisely the riches I received at birth in the form of the power to control and direct my mind to whatever ends I desire. If you are not too successful or self-satisfied to accept and express this profound prayer, if you accept it and express it in the same spirit of humble sincerity in which I pass it on to you, a new and a better world will reveal itself to you. A world in which you will see reflected the circumstances and the things which you yourself have created. In my next visit, I will give you a description of the second principle of success, through the application of which you may make use of the education and experience of other people and get the necessary help you may need in attaining your definite major purpose in life. And now let me close this, our first visit, with my favorite expression of gratitude. O divine providence, I ask not for more riches, but more wisdom with which to make wiser use of the riches you gave me at birth, consisting in the power to control and direct my own mind to whatever ends I desire.
That was Napoleon Hill, who wrote the book Think and Grow Rich. So what did we learn from this? It says here that desire is the first step of all achievement. Right? That we have to have a burning desire in life, an obsession, something that we want to do with our lives. And he says that desires can transform themselves into reality. And he gave us a 6-step formula in this video for how we can achieve any desire. The first step is that he says we have to be very definite. We have to know exactly what we want, and we have to specify it very precisely. The step number 2 is that there's no such thing as a free lunch, right? You have to pay the price for what you want. So you have to determine the exchange. What are you willing to give in return for that which you want? Number 3, you have to set a deadline. You have to set a goal or a time frame. So that's step 3. What you want, what you're going to give in return for it, by when you expect to receive this. Step 4, you have to lay out a plan. What is a plan? A plan is simply a series of steps or activities that are going to get you from where you are to where you want to be. Right? And step 5 is you have to write this out. You have to write out, here's what I want, here's what I plan to give in return, here's my deadline, and here's my plan. Once you have out this little card, then basically you have to read it aloud, what? Every day, right? How many times a day? twice, at least twice a day. Here's my little card, right? So in the morning when you wake up, you read your card. And at night when you go to bed, you read your card. Now, why is it important to have this in front of your mind in the morning and in the, you know, the first thing you do and the last thing you do? When you wake up, it's important so that you have what? A focus. What's this one thing that I'm pursuing, right, throughout the day? And when you go to bed, you read it again so that your mind can basically start what? Thinking while you're going to sleep. And the next morning, sometimes it's happened to me many times, I wake up in the middle of the night, suddenly an idea comes to my mind. And guess what I have? A little notebook, start writing away. Sometimes in the middle of the shower, ideas come to me and I start writing away, little insights that come to me about how to accomplish certain things. But the point is that when you have a clear focus on your goal, the chances of you accomplishing them is way higher than if you'd never have this. You know, I've set something up since I was 21. I've always kind of made a little list of all the goals that I want to accomplish each year. I review it on January 1st and on my birthday. Those are the 2 days when I review my list. And of all the things that I've ever wanted, guess what percentage I typically accomplish per year? About 80 to 90%. 80 to 90%. I can't say I've really hit 100%, but that's okay. The other 10 or 20% I don't hit in that 1 year, guess when I hit it? The next year or the year after. But all the things that I've really wanted to hit in my life, I've been able to accomplish following this very simple step-by-step formula. It's basically just putting down in writing, and it's important to put it in writing or in some spreadsheet or in some a thing called a vision board, which basically is a series of pictures that depict what you want. The reason is because when you just leave it in your mind, guess what happens? It's just going to float away. So you have to sort of capture those thoughts into writing or into some picture or something that's meaningful to you so that your mind stays focused on what it is that you want. So it's not just having a wish what's necessary. What we need is to have a desire, and not just any kind of desire, but what's called a burning desire. Think of the image of this child, right? This kid didn't just say, well, Dad, if you want a bike, I'm willing to get it. What are most kids when they want a bike? They're like insistent, right? When they grow up a little more, it switches to, I want a Nintendo or I want some kind of video game, right? And they're just after. How many times have you guys have kids? How often do kids persist in what they want? They persist until what? Until they get it. Right? That's how we have to be. And a burning desire is not just a wish, right? The main difference is that a burning desire is right in front of you day and night until it becomes reality. A wish is just something that's just fleeting and goes away. Now, what is it that you desire? You know, what is it that you want? Oftentimes, what's happened to us is that somewhere along the way, when we were kids, we were growing up, and sometimes it happens when we have kids, we tell them they can be anything, right? They can be president, they can be astronaut, they can be whatever they want. And yet, somewhere along the way, when kids start to grow up, what happens? Oh, we can't afford it. Oh, we can't do that. Oh, we can't have that. We start telling people no. So people start adopting self-imposed limitations. Well, why shoot for that if it's not possible, right? So we stop dreaming. Now I'm going to introduce you to Peter Daniels. Peter Daniels has been kind of my hero for the last 24 years.
God gave me another dream as a young man, 46 years ago, to change the world for 300 years. We pulled the switch on May the 25th this year. Over the next 20 years, I'm going to put 1 million Christians in the English-speaking world into freehold business of their choice through the local church, and we're going to bring in over $200 billion for evangelism. Be the biggest financial impact in the history of the Christian church. I know that some of you say, how can one person change the world in their lifetime? Well, let me remind you that Abraham changed the world in his lifetime. Moses changed the world in his lifetime. David changed the world in his lifetime. Peter changed the world in his lifetime. In more modern times, a man called Mahatma Gandhi, with what he calls Satyagraha, which was soul force, he broke the chains of colonial power. He changed the world in his lifetime. Henry Ford changed the world in his lifetime when he set the world moving via the automobile, and Roger Bannister changed the world in his lifetime when he ran the first 4-minute mile and he proved that the efforts of human endeavor are yet to come. My hero, Sir Winston Leonard Spencer Churchill, the last great English bulldog. This man that mobilized English language and sent it in a battle when he said, we will fight on the beaches, we'll fight on the landing ground, we'll fight in the field, we'll fight in the streets. With growing confidence, we will fight in the air. We will never surrender. And never before on the field of human conflict as so many owed so much to so few. So let us brace ourselves to our duties and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth would last for 1,000 years, men would still say this. This was their finest hour. He changed the world in his lifetime. Bach and Beethoven changed the world in their lifetime as they expanded our consciousness in the area of symphony and song. And Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he changed the world when there on Capitol Hill, before the Lincoln Memorial, when he gave that famous speech that said, I have a dream. He said, I have a dream that my 4 little children will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of the character. I have a dream today. And so we have traveled 12,000 miles, 31 hours to get here, to ask you a very simple question. I hope it haunts you for the rest of your life. I hope you wake up at the night with this question ringing in your ears. It's a question that Joseph's father asked his son when he said, my son, what is this dream that you have? What is this dream that you have? For many of you, it was alive and well when you were a little younger. You'd go for a swim at the beach and lay on the warm sand. You'd stand in front of a wood fire on a cold winter's night or under the starry heavens of a hot summer night, and you would do what men and women in all ages have done. You would contrast that picture of what you are against what you would like to become. And what we'd like to do over the next 72 hours is turn back on that dream machine. There are people here, and I don't have to be a genius to know this, there are people here that think they've lost their dream. There are people here that keep pushing it back when it comes out. You know you're born for something bigger. You know you've got something to do. You're not here to be employment fodder. You're here to do something great. Well, we're going to turn back on that dream machine. I can't do it if you don't come to the meetings. Tonight we're going to do something quite unique, and you better bring your seatbelt. But Monday and Tuesday night, we're going to show you how to go into business and win every single time. And older people, stop telling your kids how great they're going to be. You affirm them, you tell them they can do anything they want, and they can be president of the United States if they want to be, but they look at you. That's right, Mum and Dad, why didn't you do better? Why put the hard stuff on me? And America and Australia has the same statistic. We have the highest teenage boy suicide rate in the entire world. It's not in Kosovo, it's not in Calcutta, it's in your country, in my country. And I tell you what, we tell our kids that they can do it. We put this heavy stuff on them, and they look at us and they say, well, why didn't you do it? I hate being with people my own age. They're always glorifying the past. It was not that good. I was there.
So, what's the takeaway from that? To me, the takeaway is simply, what is this dream that you have, right? That's the key phrase that I took away from that is, we want to turn on your dream machine. What's your dream machine? Your imagination, right? To take off the limit. Like, get rid of the... Don't worry about how you're going to achieve things. Start dreaming bigger, right? It says when you were younger, you used to sit there and dream about what you wanted to achieve in life. And yet today, we look at our pocketbook or our checkbook and we say, well, that's the limit of my dream. Well, no. How about start getting rid of that limit? Start dreaming bigger, you know? So what is your dream? Do you want to stop working? Do you want to be your own boss? Do you want to have a large empire? Do you want to pay off your debts? Do you want to have fancy cars? Do you want to travel the world? Like, what is your dream? I can't decide it for you, but you have to pick it out for yourself. You know, you have to know that you weren't, like he says, you weren't just born to be an employee. You weren't just born to make some limited amount of wages. You're born for something bigger, you know. And to me, this is more than just making money for our own sake. It's to make a difference in this world. I have a big vision about what I want to do between now and the time I hit 127. That's how old I plan to be. And I'm on track to hit it. So what is this dream? Jesus said, nothing is impossible to him who believes, right? Peter Daniel says, never discard a good idea because ideas are the beginning of dreams for you to personally achieve. Martin Luther King said, I have a dream, right? So what is your dream? If the thing is right, if the thing you wish to do is right, and you believe in it, go ahead and do it. You know, put your dream across. Don't worry about what others are going to say. Sometimes you have to be careful not to share your dream with other people, because other people who have limitations, what are they going to do to your dream? They're going to squash it and say, you can't do that. Well, maybe they can't do that, but you can, right? God wouldn't put a dream in your heart if he didn't give you the capacity to achieve that dream. We think about history, who's changed the world? Recently, this week, my kids and my wife went to see some stuff that Henry Ford did here in Michigan, right? Michigan used to be a powerhouse for the car industry, and what has happened? We've let other people take it away, right? Well, who says it couldn't happen again, right? Thomas Edison, what did he create? You know, light bulb, right? Lincoln allowed, you know, freedom for everybody. The Wright brothers, what did they create? Flight, you know. And so on and so forth. More recently, who's created a lot of stuff? You know, this guy from Apple, Steve Jobs, what did he invent? You know, him and his company. Personal computer, Windows, the mouse, iPod, iPad, iPhone. And I'm sure if he had stayed alive another 50 years, he could have just kept on going, inventing more and more stuff. You know, there was a guy a few years ago, he dreamed of running in the Olympics without legs, and he did. You know, so what's the message here? The message is turn on your dream machine again. You know, whatever your dream is, make sure you take the limitations off and just start dreaming again. You have to dream bigger and bigger and bigger, and that's, to me, the message that I try to get to people is if you want to do something with your life, it has to start with dreaming bigger again. You know, and don't believe that it's not going to happen. Don't worry about the how. The how will come to you later. There's a guy that I like visiting. Right now he's about 95 years old. I'm part of his board of directors, John Edmund Haggai. He started the Haggai Institute. If you've never heard of it, research what that is. But the Haggai Institute, they are basically an amazing ministry that has trained thousands and thousands of people around the world. And they have created empires throughout the world in terms of missionary outreach. If there's somebody who's dedicated to doing the Great Commission, it's definitely these guys, and I support them 100%. So my personal motto in life is this one, dare to dream. You know, I like this phrase because to me it makes me feel like there's no limits to anything that we can do. And I really believe that success and financial freedom and prosperity is for you if you want it for yourself. You can do it if you dare to dream. And as we say for Financial Freedom and Success Institute, our motto here is dare to prosper. You know, prosperity is for everybody, but you have to dare to do it. You have to step outside what your comfort zone and start taking steps towards making it happen. And being here today is something that, you know, I appreciate you guys for coming, and I appreciate all the people who are watching online. And I really do believe that we can start creating something much bigger if we start taking steps to take responsibility of our own life and start getting rid of some of the limitations.